I have a relative, Rav Gantz, Rav Yisrael Gantz, very chashuv Rav in Matisdorf, so he doesn't know any English, but the only English he knows is Fila at home. That's what I'm used. Since we're speaking about Eretz Yisrael, we'll begin with his remark of Fila at home. Okay, I just wanted to report back some reflections on a trip that I had to Eretz Yisrael. I was zeichet to be there before Yom Kippur till after Sukkot. And the last time I was there was 8 years ago, when my oldest son had a bechor, and I missed the bris, and I attended the pidgin aben. And now I did the same thing to my second son. When we planned the trip, so we told him, you know, his wife was due around that time, so he said, you make the trip, you plan ahead, because my wife will probably give birth to a girl, and she'll probably be on time, so it's called the Gemara Svek Sveka. You have a double suffix, so rove chances are that everything's going to work out well. And it turned out that she gave birth to a boy, and she was late, and so at that point he said, we shouldn't cancel our trip. I missed the bris. The Gemara says that al yishana adam bein bein abanim, a person shouldn't make a difference between one child and another. So since I did that to my first son, I missed the bris, and I was there for the pidgin aben, so it worked out. I shouldn't miss any, but that happened. But at least Baruch Hashem, I was there. I could have missed the pidgin aben also. So Baruch Hashem, I was there last Thursday in Toronto for the pidgin aben, and Baruch Hashem said that worked out. This is the fourth time, if I remember correctly, that I've had the schus to be in Eretz Yisrael, but I think it was special in the following way. The other times I was there, it was more like a tourist, Masada, and everybody knows all the places you have to go to. We've been there, not everywhere in Eretz Yisrael, but many places. But this time I lived, I think the first time that I felt that I lived for over 3 weeks in Eretz Yisrael. My son's in-laws have what they call a villa. It's on one Rehov Yosef Gabay. So those who are familiar, it's right off Panim Meiros in the back, a breathtaking view of Yerushalayim, really beautiful. Of course, on Yom Kippur, it's even more beautiful because you don't see one car going on the road. It's illegal to... in fact, I had forgotten. I want to tell you some of the highlights. One highlight, which I just reminded myself, we went from Matisdorf, Erev Yom Kippur, to Mir Yeshiva, to Davin. Mir Yeshiva is in Geula, or near Meir Shorim. I think it's called Beis Yisrael over there. I'm not sure the exact name, but it's near Meir Shorim. So the beautiful thing was that as the Monit was taking us from Matisdorf down to the Mir, the streets were full of not cars. At a certain time, all traffic, in fact, they closed the lights. There's no more green light or red light. They closed the lights. The traffic is forbidden to go on the street. But instead, you see all people going to shul with their kittel, their white kittel, and their talesim. And the streets are, this not the sidewalks, but the actual streets are full of this people. So it's a beautiful, that's the only thing you see as you're going to shul at that time, right before Yom Kippur begins. So that's like a beautiful sight to have seen. So when I say that's the first time I lived in Eretz Yisrael, Matisdorf is where my son is, and it's a very religiously intense community. My impression is that the week after Yom Kippur is over, when we've long forgotten Yom Kippur, so they're still davening as if it's Erev Yom Kippur. And as you see how intensely they daven after Sukkot, the winter has already started, and we would probably be on that level. Erev Yom Kippur, we're davening with some intensity, and they are there after Yom Kippur is long forgotten by us, and even with probably more intensity. Sukkot morning, I was there, you know, you come to Eretz Yisrael, you're a little vacation, you want to rest. My son did not give me any rest. First day Sukkos in the morning, bright and early Vasikin, around I don't remember exactly, but 5 in the morning or so. He says we have to go to the Vasikin minyan. Why? People go to the earliest possible minyan because you have a chance to do the mitzvah of Arba Minim, the Lulav and Esrig. So you're going to wait till 7 o'clock, till 8 o'clock, till 9 o'clock. The first second that you could do the mitzvah, get up early in the morning to go. And there's a whole minyan in the sukkah over there, in the Ashkenaz minyan of Matzah Storf. And they're all they're davening so that at the first opportunity, they can shake the Lulav and Esrig. In fact, they said over, I believe they said it in the name of Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim, that he couldn't sleep a whole night. He was afraid that he's going to miss that first moment that he could shake the Lulav and Esrig, so he wasn't able to sleep a whole night. So that's like a little idea of what we mean by the intensity. After Yom Kippur was over, it was very interesting. My son, I asked him that he should expose me to... I wanted to see. I hadn't been there in 8 years since his Bechor had a Pidyon Ben. I wanted to feel, you know, his life. So he said, you want to see how we get the Arba Minim? So, Motzoi Yom Kippur, you go to the Esrog expert. So he has a younger man, a young Torah scholar learning in a kol, who's an expert in Esrogim. So he bought, before Yom Kippur, like 15 Esrogim. And he's going to use for his father-in-law and his relatives, let's say, 10 Esrogim. And he has left 5 Esrogim. So my son knows that if he chose those 15, even the 5 that he's going to reject are very good. So he made an appointment to go to him, and he gave him, we both bought 2 Esrogim. These were his rejects, but his rejects were better than what my son could have gotten by himself. So that's who he got the Esrog from. The Lulav, he goes to Rav Savitsky. Rav Savitsky is the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, and his family lives in Matzah Storf, and he goes home. That's the arrangement. His wife is a sister, I understand, of Rav Pinkus, Oliver Shalom. If you remember, he was unfortunately killed in a car accident in Bnei Brak, I think it was. So I guess the choice was, he was given the position to be Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, where Rav Belsky is a Rosh Yeshiva. And his wife didn't want to move away from Eretz Yisrael. So I guess the deal they made is he comes home a few times a year, comes home from before Yom Kippur till after Sukkot, comes home Hanukkah time, but he's away for a few months at a time. But anyway, so he lives in Matzah Storf, and he's an expert on Lulavim. So we had 4 Lulavim. You buy it in the Shuk. The Shuk is in front of the Bedatz near Kikar Shabbat, those of you who are familiar, and near Geula, in Geula, and you don't pay for it. So I was wondering, you know, how do they trust you? And as you take it, you're taking it on the condition that the Rav will look at the Lulav, and he will say whether it's good or not. He'll check whether the point is together on the top, it can't be separated. He'll check whether it's straight, whatever. So the answer, I asked my son, like, how do they trust people? So he says, someone who's looking for a very good Lulav, there's a halacha din that if you steal a Lulav, you're not Yotze. Mitzvah habo b'avera. You're doing a mitzvah through an avera. So a person who is so careful that he's going to have a perfect lulav on the top that's not separated at all, even a mashahu, which people are machmer on, such a person for sure he's not going to steal. So they don't even ask you for the money. They're sure that if it's rejected, you're going to bring it back. And so we went to him. Baruch Hashem, he had 4 lulavim. They were good. All of them were... One was a little better than the other, but they were all acceptable by Rabbi Savitsky, who's the expert on that. Hadassim, we got up early, again, Vasikin, for like early 5 in the morning to daven with the rising of the sun. And then right away we went over to Me'ah Shearim, because there are Arab merchants who know that they're going to make nice shkolim over there in Me'ah Shearim, and they bring beautiful hadassim. and they line up the whole street of Mea Shearim, and that's where people who know where to get good hadassim, that's where they get hadassim. So it was interesting. Each one of the Arba Minim had a separate story, a separate experience. It wasn't just you exactly go to your local Esrog and Lulav and you get everything in one shot, but each one, I think again, it shows the intensity. How do you buy the Dalet Minim? This is each one was done in a very special way. One of the most amazing things where I said wow when I saw it was my son's yeshiva. Son's yeshiva is called Chochma Shloima. It's named after Reb Shloima Zalman Orbach, the Nasi, the president of the yeshiva. Is his son Hagoyin Rav Shmuel Orbach Shlita. So they had a Simchas Beis Yeshiva, and it was they are in what's called Karavanin. Karavanin are trailers. The yeshiva, it has over 1,000 Talmidim, but they haven't yet gotten a building. I'm sure eventually they will. Right now they're in these Karavanin. For the Simchas Beis Yeshiva, they wanted to have the whole yeshiva together, so they were allowed to use the Chevroner Yeshiva. The Chevron Yeshiva, which originally was in near the Moris HaMachpelah in Chevron, but as you are probably familiar, in 1929, the Arabs massacred, I think it was around 70 yeshiva bachrim. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner used to go, that's where he learned. I don't think he was there at the time of the massacre. Then they moved the yeshiva to Yerushalayim, and now there's two chevrons. One is in near Geula, one is in Givat Mordechai. The one in Givat Mordechai is a very new yeshiva as far as the building, and it's beautiful, and it's very large. I don't know how to give you an idea of how big it is, but it's one of the largest yeshiva batei midrashim in the world. So with hundreds of talmidim. So when I came in and they davened Maariv, they were going to have a Simchas Beis Yeshiva, and I came there just as they were saying Kriya Shema. So they had, like, they had their hand over their face. And usually you have 1,000 young boys, they're going to be running around all over the place, but it was Kriya Shema. So I came in, and what did I see? In this huge Beis HaMedrash, every seat was taken with these boys sitting next to their fathers. So when I saw this view, I said, wow. It was like something unbelievable to see. Kenaina Hara, Kain Yirbu, over 1,000 boys with their fathers in attendance. It was a tremendous impression. The last day we were there, we were trying to get an earlier flight out. My wife and I both work, and we want to get back to our jobs, but we didn't manage to get it. But Baruch Hashem, we didn't, because on the last day that we were there, we had the schus to be at a bris of Rabbi Yashiv's great-great-grandson, and his son-in-law is Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is the son of the stipler, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky, Zitzal, and rarely does Rav Chaim Kanievsky leave Bnei Brak. But they explained that it was Bein Azmanim. The Zman hadn't started yet. And also the father of this baby is his grandson, Rav Chaim Kanievsky's grandson. And he is Mishamesh. He helps Rav Chaim Kanievsky. They're very close. So he made an exception that he left Bnei Brak and he came to the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yashiv in Mea Shearim. And Rabbi Yashiv was the Sandik at the Bris. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky read the name and the Kriya Shem. And the name was after his father, the stipler. So just to see in one Beis Medrash these two Torah giants together, which you rarely see. Rabbi Yashiv is not well enough to leave Yerushalayim, and Rabbi Kanievsky doesn't travel from Bnei Brak. So, but to see these two Torah giants, there's so much Torah between these two, the father-in-law and the son-in-law together, it was a tremendous thing. And the amount of people that crowded around Rabbi Kanievsky and his father-in-law, they bring from around the corner in a golf cart, And he comes into the Beis Medrash on a walker, using a walker. So I was there for davening. It's very, you know, to see how Yashiv davens is many things that I noticed, how he davens. One of the things I noticed is some people, you know, to adjust their tefillin, some people just, you have to have it right straight over your nose on the top of your forehead, and some people have it over here on the side, some people have it down here, which is not, you're not Yotze. So there, people adjust it. So some people use a mirror, and some people are against, especially Hasidim, are against using a mirror, looking in, seeing how you look. You shouldn't use it. I saw that Rabbi Yashiv uses a mirror when he puts it on. Not only does he use a mirror when he puts it on, but two or three times during davening, he looks at the mirror to adjust, to make sure that the tefillin are exactly put where they're supposed to. So it was very interesting to see how he davens. And then later, there was first one bris at 9 o'clock, and then 9:15, 9:30, there was the second bris where Rav Kanievsky attended. So that in fact, something happened over there. What, they didn't let the car move. They were trying to back out, and everybody's crowding around the car to see Rav Kanievsky. And I found myself right next to a wall, and the car is right next to me. And Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky is in the car, and they're not letting the car move. They're mamish surrounding the entire car. And suddenly, I felt a wheel go over my foot. So at that point, I banged down on the car, and I screamed out. So as somebody said, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky heard from me. But Baruch Hashem, they were going at very, very slow speed, and Baruch Hashem, hopefully everything, their foot was not affected. So that was certainly a memorable. The Rebbetzin Kanievsky was there, and my wife was able to get a bracha from her. So that was a special event. Another very special thing, if anybody is planning to go to Eretz Yisrael, I recommend highly that you go to Bells if you haven't been there. If you want to see a little bit of what the Beis Hamikdash looked like in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, or heard this Beis Hamikdash, the second Beis Hamikdash was even greater in beauty. The Gemara says that whoever didn't see the Beis Hamikdash that heard this build didn't see a beautiful building in their life. So this, I would imagine, is a little bit of what the Beis Hamikdash was like. It's awesome. It's unbelievable. They have their 9 chandeliers. Each chandelier, there's 8 baby ones. The baby one is like half of this room, probably. The baby ones. Then there's one jumbo that's bigger than all the other 8. And what I noticed was that there was not one bulb in the entire Beis HaMedrash that was out. You know, like usually there's a bulb or two. You go into a shul, there's a few bulbs out. There wasn't one bulb. So Belzer Chosid explained to me, how did they change the bulbs? It's by electric. They press a button, and the whole huge chandelier, which weighs a ton, probably literally a ton, comes down, and then the guy just stands there and changes the bulb. So it's beautiful. It's organized well. Every person has the seat plate, their name. And if you come as a guest for Yomim Noroyim, it says on your seat, it says, let's say you're not sitting there during, you're away. So they take your seat and they give it to a guest. So your name is in the back. You own the seat. I understand someone has a seat in the front. His father paid $1 million lifetime to have that seat. But for Yom Nerum, so they put in plastic your name, that you have the seat for Yomim Noroyim Tov Shin Samach Vav. You get a special plastic name, that's your seat. Anyway, well, what's very interesting, in all this beauty that this building is, unbelievable, how many millions it cost to build, but there's under a plexiglass, there is an old shtender and a broken down chair, and that was the chair and the shtender of the previous Rebbe. I think his name was Rav Naftali. So, and the people said that if he traveled around the world, how would they know that the Rebbe is coming? If the chair was in the Beis HaMedrash, the old chair, wherever you went in the world, the chair, the old broken chair, which doesn't fit in at all to the beauty of the bells now, but the previous Rebbe, he didn't sit on the seats that we're sitting right now. He had this old wooden chair, this broken shtender, and it's in plexiglass. So that's what the Rebbe took with him around the world. So there's a contrast between the beauty of bells and this old broken chair and shtender that the previous Rebbe used. What's that? In Yerushalayim, yeah, it's near Ezra's Torah. It's not far from Matzav. We walked there. I was there at a Tish Friday night. They have a Tish. The Gaboyim walk over the tables in their socks, throwing out bottles of wine, Shiraim from the Rebbe. So it's also a very interesting experience. I was at three interesting siyumim. One was my son learns in a Choshe Mishpat Kolel. So his Kolel, not he himself, started in the middle of the program. They've been learning Choshe Mishpat for 10 years. And they finally, that makes them a dayan. They're allowed to paskin halachas of money matters. There's two in Eretz Yisrael. You have a rav. A rav knows the dinim of Arachayim and Yoredeya. And a dayan, he's qualified to paskin. A judge is qualified to paskin in Choshe Mishpat money matters, Evan Ezer, which is things that have to do with marriage and divorce. So that's the program that finished after 10 years Choshe Mishpat. And they had Rabbonim there, the Gaiva, the head of the Eda Chredis, Rav Weiss was there. They had the Rav Scheinberg, Rav Don Segal, Rav Gantz that I mentioned before, Rav Schlesinger's a Rav Shivan Kultar, Moshe Halberstam, many of the great Gedolim of Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael attended that Siyum. So that was one beautiful Siyum. The second was a small Siyum, but in quality it was a very large Siyum. Rav Michal Zilber, who is a famous Rav Shiva and he gives a lot of Shirim in Daf Yomi, he lives in Matastarv, and every Oshana Rabba, I don't know if it's at the same time, this year was at 2:45, people get together in a sukkah, 20 people, he makes himself a siyum on Shas Bavli and Shas Yerushalmi. To give you an idea, I just finished Shas Bavli, and I don't want to say how old I am, but I don't do it every year. It took me my whole lifetime to finish it. He finishes every year Bavli. Not only Bavli, Daf Yomi, if you do one Daf a day, takes 7.5 years to finish. He finishes every year, and not only Bavli, but Yerushalmi as well. And on Lag BaOmer, I understand he makes a siyum on Zohar. So this was a second siyum. And the third siyum that I had the schus to attend was something a little bit related to the OU. One of the literary editor of the Jewish Action, you may have noticed, is Rabbi Matis Greenblatt. He used to live in Muncie. He now lives in Bayit Vegan, which I visited him in his house in Bayit Vegan. So his grandson is Mayor Rennels. He used to live in Muncie. They made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. He's 18 years old, and he finished Shas. This unbelievable what this boy came from a lot of perseverance and learning, and Baruch Hashem, that was a special thing that an 18-year-old boy finished the entire Shas. It says, Chazal say, Avira da'ara machkib, the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes a person wise. So I have an interesting story, and then just perhaps a few divrei Torah of things that I thought about in Eretz Yisrael. The interesting story is, you may have heard that there is a program called Dirshu. Dirshu was started by someone in Toronto called Mr. David Hofstetter. And what it is, Daf Yomi is a beautiful thing. The one problem with Daf Yomi is you learn it so quickly that in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you forgot already what you learned. You're covering a Daf a day. So what he instituted was getting tested. When you get tested once a month, so you have to review your material. So this helps you remember it. And if you score a certain amount over an 80, he actually pays you for if you get over a 90, you get more. If you get 100, you get more. There's an incentive. In Eretz Yisrael, they have 6,000 people that are learning this program, the Dirshu program. They have it in Europe. They have here. We don't have such a large amount, 500-600 people in America, but it's a tremendous program. Anyway, I had met him once before, and now I met him again in at a rally for Dirshu. I met him again, and he says to me, the last time he didn't remember. We think that because he was an Eretz Yisrael, it says in Eretz Yisrael, your mind is a little better. So he said, the second time we met, he says, I know you. You were my Rebbe in 1969. There's a camp, Stei Chemed, made by Bori Chait, who now has a yeshiva called Marava, which is right near to Kiryat Sefer. So he says, you were my learning Rebbe in 1969, you know. So he's a multi-billionaire, so I guess I taught him, you know, good Torah, and I taught him well how to make money. Now he has to teach me how to do it. Anyway, so he, so that was a very nice thing that he remembered that I was his Rebbe in 1969, and he didn't remember it. I had met him in Lakewood a few years ago. He didn't remember it. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, he remembered it. So I just want to share with you briefly. I thought of three ideas while I was in Eretz Yisrael, and it's things that I've spoken about before. Perhaps you'll remember it from some of our past shiurim, and I was able to have a insight there. We mentioned a thought from Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab says on, we say in davening, Ashrei ish sheyishma lemitzvaysecha v'soyroscha udvorcha yosem alibay. Praiseworthy is the man that who will listen to your commandments and your Torah and his word, the person will put on his heart. So the question of Schwab asked is, what is Devorcha, his word, the word of Hashem? You already said he's going to keep the mitzvahs. You said he's listening to Hashem's Torah. So what do you mean Devorcha, his word? What's more than Torah and mitzvahs? So Rav Schwab answers, based on a Ramban, that Dvorcha means things that happen to a person. If something happens to a person, it's a word from Hashem. Nothing in the world happens to a person unless Hashem is sending you a message. For example, by Nadav Aviv, when they died, it says, "Hu asher dibra Hashem b'kroivai HaKadosh." This is what Hashem said, "With my close ones I will sanctify myself." Where did Hashem say that statement? "With my close ones I will sanctify myself." We don't find such a pasuk said by Hashem. The answer is, he didn't say it, but he did say it. He said it by the event. Since Nadav Aviv were taken by Hashem, they were close to Hashem. So that itself, without Hashem saying it, it was like he said it. This is a beautiful pshat that the Ramban says, and this is what Rav Schwab says, is what we say in davening. Ashrei ish sheyishma mitzvaysecha, he'll listen to your mitzvahs, and your Torah, udvorcha, and your word, yosem aliboy. What's your word? Your word means that whatever happens to me, I learn a lesson. We don't always know what lesson Hashem is trying to teach us. So maybe we think it's one of five lessons. So take all five lessons, whatever, but learn a lesson from whatever happened to you. So it's a beautiful pshat. The only, I was just in Eretz Yisrael, it hit me, maybe there's a different pshat. The different pshat is based on what we say after we read the Haftorah from the Navi in Shul on Shabbos. We say, Asher bochar binvim tovim v'rotza b'divreihem hanemorim be'emes. We thank Hashem that He chose good neviim, and Hashem wants the words of the neviim which are said in truth. So perhaps what word is being used here? B'divreihem, in their words. So perhaps when a Navi, the difference between Chumash and Navi is, Chumash is the exact word of Hashem. Navi is Hashem inspires the prophet, the Navi, but the wording is the Navi's own wording. Hashem puts it in his mind, perhaps, what to say. But it's not like Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe, and that's written in the Torah. And these are the exact words that Hashem said to Moshe. Here, Hashem inspires the Navi with prophecy, but the exact choice of which word to use, that the Navi himself chooses which word to use. So, however, if he's a Navi Emes, not a false prophet, he's a real prophet who was inspired by prophecy from Hashem. So Hashem wants the words of the Navi, which are said in truth. So perhaps, this is my own thought, that Ashrei Ish, Yishmael Mitzvah Secha V'Soroscha, blessed is the man who listens to your mitzvahs and your Torah, Udvorcha, your words, Hashem. Which words? The words of the Navi. Because they were inspired by you, and if they're words of truth, Hanemorim Be'emes, they're said with truth, then they basically come down that they're your words, Hashem. Your words which you inspired the Navi to say. So perhaps that's a different look at it than Rav Schwab. Perhaps that's what the Dvorcha signifies. I thought of it because there's a Brisker Kollel in Eretz Yisrael in a beautiful building where they have like five floors of minyanim, and it was built by Rav Chaim Kreisworth from Antwerp, and so they read the Nevi'im. In many shuls you read the Navi on Shabbos from the Haftorah, you read it from a Chumash, or you read it from a Koran Tanakh that has all Tanakh in it. You're supposed to read it from something that has all Tanakh. But the best way to read Haftorah is from a scroll, like a Sefer Torah. You have a Navi scroll. So many shuls now are buying Navi scrolls. Where do you store it? So they have a special storage for the Nevi'im, the scrolls of the Nevi'im. So in the Brisker Kollel, there were two of these storage closets. They were on the wall, and on one of them it said Asher Bochar b'Nevi'im Tovim, and on the other one it said V'rotza b'Divreim and Amorim b'Emes. So when I davened there, this kept staring at me, and that gave me the inspiration that maybe that's the word of Udvorcha Yasma Liboy. That's thought number one. Thought number two, we had mentioned, I'm not going to say the whole thing over again, but the thought was that we said it recently, that during the 9 days, during Tisha B'Av, we have to mourn not only on the Beis HaMikdash, not only on Yerushalayim, but we also have to mourn on Torah, because we brought a pasuk in Eicha, Malka v'Soreo Bagoyim Ein Torah, that today we don't have the real Torah, and we gave a mashal. What does it mean we don't have the real Torah? You have 4,000 in Mir Yeshiva. You have four. They're building buildings, and they're all over in every shtibel around Mir Yeshiva. You have people learning. There's 4,000 in Lakewood. You have 4,000. So what does it mean there's no Torah? There's plenty of Torah. But the answer is we gave a mashal of a boy and a man who were shipwrecked on an island, and the man saw that the young boy is a bright boy. He said, you know what, I'm going to teach you the alphabet. So he starts teaching them. They don't have any books. So the boy asks, why am I learning these sounds, these funny sounds? He says, right now, you don't see any purpose. But when we get Mirzsham, we're going to get saved. So you're going to come to a Jewish city, and you'll be able to walk into any shul or beis medrash, and you'll open up a siddur or a chumash, and you'll know how to read. That's why we're practicing these funny sounds. So the Night of Yehuda explains that all our learning today is the same like that little boy. We're saying the words. The real depth of the Torah we don't know. That we have to wait for Mashiach to come. But at least we're going through the sound motions. We have a very low, limited understanding of the Torah. But when Mashiach comes, we'll have the full. So the question that was bothering me was, if so, what's our Simchas Torah? I mean, if we don't have the real Torah, we're only going to get the depths of the Torah when Mashiach comes. So what's our whole Simchas Torah about? So at this Choshe Mishpat Siyam that I mentioned before, Rav Don Segel spoke. He said a thought, and that answered the question. It says, David HaMelech said, Sos Anoichi Al Imra Secha Kemaitzi Shal Rav. I was so happy, I rejoiced over your words of Torah, like someone who finds a great spoil from war. The shalol in war is called the spoils of war are called a shalol. Kemaitzi Shalol Rav. So he said from the Vilna Gaon that the word Imra Secha, which means your sayings, can also mean like on a garment. A garment has threads. Threads are called imre. So in other words, David HaMelech, who knew the whole depth of the Torah, but I was so happy on your Torah, Hashem, even one letter, even the threads means the outer part, not the whole garment. When the garment is made and you're able to clothe yourself in the garment and your body is covered by the garment. That's the depth. That's the inner part of the Torah. No, David HaMelech says, I rejoice over your Torah like Imra Secha, even a letter of the Torah, even a thread, even just the outside part is so holy and so deep that even that I rejoice. For sure I rejoice over the real depth of the Torah, which David knew. We don't know that depth. We will know it when Mashiach comes. But I was so happy even on a letter of the Torah. You know what? I was more happy than someone who finds not a dollar in the street, but someone who finds a spoil of war, gold and silver, which people find in war. And not only a small amount, but kisholo rav, one letter of the Torah, one outer garment of the Torah, not the depths of the Torah, is so precious that it's worth more than all the gold and silver in the world. So that's our Simchas Torah. Even though we don't have the real depth of the Torah, but we rejoice just like David HaMelech rejoiced, even for a letter of the Torah. It's so wonderful and so great that that's what our Simchas Torah is about. And finally, the last thing that I thought of, and so I had to speak at a bris. A relative of mine had a bris then, so they asked me to speak. So I thought of something to say, and as I was saying it, the following thought dawned on me, that if you remember, we once had a story between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon didn't give tzedakah properly, and he asked Rabbi Akiva to invest money for him in a city, real estate. And what did Rabbi Akiva do? He took the money and he gave it out to the poor people. And after a while, the Rabbi Tarfon said, I want to see the city that you bought me. So he took him into the base of Medrash, and he started reading Tillim from him, from Perek Aleph till Perek Kuf Yud Beis. And in Perek Kuf Yud Beis, it says, Pizar Nasan Lev Yoinim V'tzit Kosoi Oimedes Lod, that someone who gives money to poor people, his charity remains for eternity. A city is also not just the World Trade Center, but a city is called the World Trade Center. We know in a minute the whole structure could fall down. They said now with the hurricane in Indiana, I just heard it on the radio, a lady saying, I worked my whole life for this house, and then a few seconds the whole thing is gone. The Gashmi is the physical part of this world, even though it looks like a superstructure. We know a few blocks from the OU right here in a few minutes, in an hour, and when it fell in a minute, the whole thing fell down. I was walking up the Broadway, back away, the policeman told me run away, and when I turned my face around, one block later there was no more building. A block before, the building was standing with a hole in it. A block later, I turned around, I didn't hear it fall, I didn't see it fall, gone. So this world, real estate that we think is real estate, in a second it'll be gone. But the ear, the city in heaven that we build, that is for eternity. If it's it costs a medis la'ad, forever. You want me to invest your money in a good investment? I gave it to the poor because that city is forever. So what dawned on me in Eretz Yisrael was that we see that where we ask the question, why didn't he just tell him the pasuk? Why did he have to go to the base of medrash and read it from the beginning and then tell it to Rabbi Tarfon? Rabbi Akiva was afraid that even the great Rabbi Tarfon, he would forget what the real estate was. He would think that the World Trade Center was the real estate. He had to take him in the base medrash, he had to daven with him, tell him, till Kuf Yud Beis, then he would finally penetrate what real estate is, Olam Haba, doing mitzvahs. So what dawned on me was that even though, where did they live? They lived in Eretz Yisrael. The kever of Rabbi Akiva, we had this chus to see, is right near the Rambam in Tveria. So they lived in near Tzvas and Tveria. They lived in holy cities. They did mitzvahs. And even so, he couldn't tell it to him outside in the street. He had to take him into the Beis HaMedrash. So what we learn is that the Kiddush of Beis HaMedrash, the holy site of Torah and davening, that's something even greater than Eretz Yisrael. Outside in Eretz Yisrael, as holy as Eretz Yisrael is, and it's the best place in the world to do mitzvahs, but, and that's the Ramban says that all the mitzvahs we do here in Chutz La'aretz is just a reminder of what it's like to do in Eretz Yisrael. We shouldn't forget the real place to do mitzvahs, he says, is Eretz Yisrael. So, right? And this is just like, you're going to go 50, 60 years without doing mitzvahs, Mashiach will come, you won't know what to do in Eretz Yisrael. So we're like practicing the mitzvahs, Mirtz Hashem, when we go to Eretz Yisrael. But the real place is where the castle, where Hashem's palace is in Eretz Yisrael. That's the real place to do mitzvahs. So with all that, but Rabbi Akiva couldn't tell Rabbi Tarfon about how important it is to give tzedakah, and that's the real estate. He couldn't tell it to him in the street. He had to take him in that holy street. It wasn't enough. He'll only get the message in the holiness of the Beis HaKnesses, in the holiness of the Beis HaMedrash, saying the Tehillim from the beginning till Kuf Yud Beis. Then the message will penetrate even into Reb Tarfon, and even though he was a Tana, but to get the real message, that's what was needed. So I just pointed out, that hit me in Eretz Yisrael. You can be in Eretz Yisrael, and there are things even in Eretz Yisrael that can make you not see the real reality, the real estate. You have to go into the yeshiva, into the Beis HaMedrash, and then you get the real message.